All right, so this morning what I want to do is focus on chapter 3, and particularly we're going to start and cover verses 1 through 7 and talk about the qualifications for elders in God's church. And so to begin that, before we kind of kick everything off, let's begin it by reading 1 Timothy chapter 3, beginning in verse 1. I'm going to read through verse 7. It says, "This is a faithful saying. If a man desires the position of a bishop, he desires a good work. A bishop then must be blameless, the husband of one wife, temperate, sober-minded, of good behavior, hospitable, able to teach, not given to wine, not violent, not greedy for money, but gentle, not quarrelsome, not covetous, one who rules his own house well, having his children in submission with all reverence. For if a man does not know how to rule his own house, how will he take care of the church of God? Not a novice, lest being puffed up with pride, he fall into the same condemnation as the devil. Moreover, he must have a good testimony among those who are outside, lest he fall into reproach in the snare of the devil." And so, as we begin kind of looking at this part of the text, I think it's important for us to think about leadership, and to think about, particularly in this context, we're going to be talking about leadership in the Lord's church, but I think that we can all be thinking about, you know, why do we need good leaders? Why do we need good leaders in the world that we live in, whether it's our jobs and business organizations, whether it's in our civil government? You know, why is it that that we need these? We don't just want them. We need good people to lead. And if all of that is important, why is it, or how much more important is it that we have the right kind of leaders in God's church? And so thinking kind of about that, and as we kind of put our minds in that for a second, we're looking at the qualifications of the elders in the local church. And so you know, if all of those are important, what must our standard be?
His word,
right? And that's an obvious answer. However, we need to, I think, constantly remind ourselves that that is our standard, that we are going here to find the qualifications of these men. And from that, we are, you know, following God's plan of putting leaders in an office and a position of authority over a flock. And so, you know, we need to constantly not ask ourselves, what do I want an elder to be, but what does God want in an elder? And so as we go through these qualifications, let's think about that. Let's think about how important it is to have the right kind of leader. If I'm installing a leader in a business, I may have a list of qualifications, and they may be pertinent to that, but just because you know, somebody's qualified to lead a company doesn't mean they're qualified to be an elder. And it's, you could also, I think, make the same argument that just because somebody is qualified to be an elder doesn't make them qualified to learn to lead some company. My point is that there's two sets of standards, for one for each leader, right? So a company has to make a decision on who's best for that organization, but in God's church, it is His church, and so He sets that standard. So let's keep reminding ourselves what we are looking at and where our standard is. So so he begins in this first verse, and he says, he calls it a faithful saying or a trustworthy statement. And he says, if a man desires the position. So right away we have a qualification that is on the part of the man, and that is that he has to desire the position. And from that, I think we get an idea of where his heart is, right? You know, what do you have when you put somebody into any position where their heart's not in it? Right, it's not going to go well, to say the least, right? At the very least, it's not going to go well. It's not going to be good for them. It's not going to be for the people they're charged with overseeing or taking care of. And so first and foremost, They have to want to do it. Is it something that they, I think we kind of touched on this last week, but is it something that we get the impression from these scriptures that it is simply they got asked and so they're, yeah, sure, I'll do that. No, right? We talked, I think somebody mentioned last week that it's something that what we infer from, I think, the rest of the qualifications here is that this desire is longstanding, that it is something that in order to be qualified, you can't decide today to qualify yourselves and be qualified by tomorrow. You know, it is a long-term commitment and a long-term desire to do it. And so when we ask people to serve as elders, I think it's important on us as members of the flock, when we go through that process, to think about that, to think about, you know, asking them about their desire to be an elder, and maybe even talk to them about it. And so it's not, I think sometimes we kind of get the idea that it's unbecoming to want some sort of position of authority, you know, because I don't think we're looking for aspirational in terms of people who are looking for it for power and those kinds of things. In fact, I think we're not. But rather, we're looking for a man who's got a heart to do the work of the Lord. All right, and he even talks about that in this passage. The other thing that we see here is that it is a position. My version said, if any man aspires to the office of overseer. And we're going to talk about the word overseer here in just a second, but what does an office or a position signify? Leadership. Responsibility, right? People in an office have responsibility for things. Yes, sir?
Judgment.
Yeah, the ability to exercise that judgment. And that ability comes because they have what? Well, wisdom, but what I'm really looking for is authority. Right, an office and a position come with a certain amount of authority. Where does that authority come from in this case? Right, and it comes from God because it's a position that is laid out in Scripture. All right, so this authority to the authority behind this office comes from the Lord, and so the authority that's there is important because as we think about what this person is going to do. You know, as they carry out this office, you know, I think that's the important part is that we have to recognize that this is an authoritative position, and that it is one that has that because of what God has planned. And then we see it sought out by qualified men. Vine said he described this kind of this characteristic desire more earnestly when he's talking about. My version says aspires, but the word here stresses the inward impulse. It implies eagerness, but not of an immoderate or unchristian character. I think that's what I was trying to say about we're not looking for somebody here who's simply concerned with attaining this office for all of its wonderful benefits and power that comes with it. And I'm saying that a little bit tongue-in-cheek. What I mean is that we're not looking for somebody who's seeking simply to just be the ruler of all and aspires to the power side. It is to be greatly desired, is another point that he makes. And then finally, he says, if he does this, he desires to do what? Some versions say he desires a good work, right?
A noble task,
right? And so we realize, too, that this idea behind a good work is one of serving the kingdom and serving your brothers and sisters. Yes, sir.
And I think that noble work or good work is kind of the key aspect to it. You're effectively applying for a job. Just like my resume has to match the job listing for somebody to hire me. Here's what the resume of an elder needs to look like. And I think many of us have probably been in positions before where you have responsibility but no authority. And that doesn't ever work. You can't execute your responsibilities without the authority. So here he's saying, they desire a good work. It's a good thing to want to have this responsibility. And in order to allow you to execute your responsibilities, you're going to be given some authority.
Mm-hmm. Yes. good point. All right. All right, so he says, you know, it starts out if, and then we have this then. So we've got an if-then statement. If he does aspire to do it, he desires a fine work. And so it says an overseer then must be. And so there's some important notes about that term because it illustrates a binding necessity. These are not character recommendations. You know, it's not like, hey, if you're looking for a good elder, you should get a guy that does all these things, or does most of them, or seems like this kind of, you know, we're not looking for that, right? Just like Aaron said about your qualifications on a resume, we're looking for men who are truly qualified. You know, as I was studying this, I was thinking about this next question, and I've been thinking about it carefully, because when we talk about somebody in the job role and being qualified, does that mean they're going to be a good elder?
Not necessarily.
I think the reason I say that I'm being careful about it is because if a man truly does possess these qualities, I think that God's plan is that that's the kind of man that's going to be a good elder. But we're not perfect, you know, so we know that. So we put that on top of it too. A man can be qualified, and as he goes through, he can disqualify himself too, right? And he can be an elder who disqualifies himself. And so, you know, when you're talking about how men are going to live the rest of their lives, they're not going to be perfect. And we'll say more about that, I think, a little bit later when we're talking about some of these qualifications. But, you know, it doesn't necessarily mean that he's going to be a good elder, but a man who's qualified is what God has given us, you know, and says these qualities are required. And I think what we see from it is because of the kind of man it puts in office as an elder. Yes, sir.
I think what we're circling around here is defining the reason that a man would aspire to something like this. We're sort of saying it, but out loud we would say, I think, the reason to aspire to this is because of a person's concern for the well-being of the body of Christ. If you have other concerns that cause you to aspire for that, those don't apply.
Yeah, that's a better way of, I think, saying what maybe I was trying to say is it does. It speaks to the heart. Like, it speaks to what his motivation is, and a man who's truly qualified along these lines is following God's plan for putting qualified men into office. We mustn't limit the truths of God because we think the qualifications are too hard. None of these are optional. Again, this goes back to this idea of he must be. You know, I think sometimes it's easy to think, to look at this list and think, okay, well, how can I can't expect that of myself. How can I expect that of somebody else? That's not what God's put in front of us. What God's put in front of us is the men who are going to lead as elders in a local church must be these things. And so if God is putting that down, are they too hard? They're not too hard for everybody, right? And he talks about, Paul wrote that too, right? He said that not everybody is going to be an elder. Not everybody's going to be a preacher. We all have roles and responsibilities and gifts, and so recognizing that just because somebody has lived a certain number of years doesn't necessarily, that in and of itself doesn't qualify them to be an elder. And so we can't start to let our own reasoning get into this. We're not looking at a list of optional qualifications.
Hey, Matt.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, a couple of things. The word noble there, this is a noble work, so that, you know, that harkens back to Ephesians 4:8, whatever is true, whatever is noble, etc. So we established that. But some of the older versions, like the King James or the New King James, use the word desire instead of aspire. Mm-hmm. And those two words, I think maybe there's a little bit of a disservice in considering it as aspire, because to Dick's point, you can desire the office because of your love and concern for the flock. Aspiration seems to be a broader term to me. That seems career-oriented, maybe a little bit of ambition involved with that, whereas desire is a simpler word, a simpler concept. And so just looking at different versions maybe gives us a little bit clearer idea.
Yeah, mine has both of them in the New American Standard. It's got aspires to the office, and it is a fine work he desires to do. And maybe that helps too, just because, you know, when we think about aspirational, we think of looking at something, you know, of something that we're trying to attain, something that we're trying to be. Yeah, thank you. All right, so let's look a little bit at... We'll keep looking at that slide and we'll just talk. All right, so let's look at the position a little bit, and particularly let's break down the words that are being used. So we have in this part where we're looking at bishop or overseer. And so that's the word that is translated here. It comes from the Greek episkopos. And so there are three terms that we see in the New Testament that we know are related and pertain to this role. Let's turn over to Acts chapter 20 and read there real quick. We're going to begin in verse 17. All right, in Acts chapter 20 and verse 17, he says, "From Miletus he sent to Ephesus and called to him the elders of the church. And when they had come to him, he said to them, 'You yourselves know from the first day that I set foot in Asia how I was with you the whole time, serving the Lord with all humility and with tears and with trials which came upon me through the plots of the Jews. How I did not shrink from declaring to you anything that was profitable and teaching you publicly from house to house, solemnly testifying to both Jews and Greeks of repentance towards God and faith in our Lord Jesus Christ. And now, behold, bound by the Spirit, I am on my way to Jerusalem, not knowing what will happen to me there, except that the Holy Spirit solemnly testifies to me in every city, saying that bonds and afflictions await me. But I do not consider my life of any account as dear to myself, so that I may finish my course and the ministry which I receive from the Lord Jesus to testify solemnly of the gospel of the grace of God. And now, behold, I know that all of you among whom I went about preaching the kingdom will no longer see my face. Therefore, I testify to you this day that I am innocent of the blood of all men. For I did not shrink from declaring to you the whole purpose of God. Be on guard for yourselves and for all the flock, among which the Holy Spirit has made you overseers, to shepherd the church of God, which he purchased with his own blood.'" And so he's speaking, Paul is speaking in this context to a very specific men, but he also references at the beginning of that passage, that they brought in the elders. And so we see this term there, but we also see two other terms that we'll talk about here in a second. We also see this in Titus chapter 1, verse 7 is another place that this is used when he's talking about these qualifications and writing to Titus, and then also Philippians 1:1. And so this term, though, means, when it's translated, an inspector, an overseer, a watcher, and a guardian. And so that's the first idea I think we want to think about is this term and what that implies, because the whole reason behind looking at the different terms to describe this office are to give us an understanding of what role this person is supposed to fulfill. Why do they have to be qualified to do all these things? And you can see, we can learn from, I think, the term that you can do this because, you know, this person, this is a certain kind of person. This office has certain characteristics. And so in the Old Testament, this same term was used. We see it a couple places. In 2 Chronicles 34, they were appointed by Josiah, these men that they referred to as overseers, to oversee the workmen repairing the temple. And then also we see it in Nehemiah. There were these overseers of the workmen employed in rebuilding the wall around Jerusalem. And so in all these instances, this is from J.W. McGarvey, in all these instances it designates persons who have the oversight of the persons for the purpose of directing their labors and securing a faithful performance of the tasks assigned them. So you get this idea of this office being one that has the purpose of doing what? The first thing that we learn from this, they think about those overseers. I think one of the translations said it, like the literal translation would be like literally looking over the shoulder of the one. So imagine somebody who has been charged with seeing that people carry out what they are supposed to be doing. Okay, all right. So they're overseeing a flock that is supposed to be doing something. All right, they're not just we don't appoint elders to be the guys who do everything. Same thing for deacons. We don't appoint deacons to be the guys who do everything. All right, there are things that I think we have to do as members of a flock, and we have overseers to help us do that. We have overseers to watch to make sure that we do these things in the right way. Thayer says the term means a man charged with the duty of seeing that things done by others are done rightly. Any curator, guardian, superintendent. In the New Testament, a guardian of souls, one who watches over their welfare, the superintendent, head, or overseer of any church. And so when applied to the officers in the church, it carries with it the significance already attached, namely, persons appointed to superintend the affairs of the church, to direct activities of the members, and to see that everything is done that should be done at the right time and in the right way. And so the first thing I think that we take away from, about what is an elder, and before we even talk about who's qualified to do it, is that it is a position where they are charged with overseeing workers. They are overseeing people in God's kingdom. All right. And so I think that's important for us to file away and put in there when we're talking about qualifications. Okay, it's somebody who we need to oversee. Here's a microphone coming. Thanks.
If you look in 1 Peter chapter 5, verse 2, it says shepherd.
Yes.
The flock. I think we all understand, if we think in terms of sheep and a shepherd that oversees them, we understand what his role is. We also get a real good idea or view of how he goes about doing that role, what his relationship to that flock is and isn't. And I think that gives us a real clear picture of what God is talking about when he says an elder. And we are the sheep, and the elder is that shepherd. Does he look at the sheep in his flock the way that shepherd would look at his sheep, or does he not? And that's the man you're looking for, the one that does see it the way God described it, the way he saw it.
Yeah, so what let's talk about that term then, too, and then we'll come back to the other term. And so that is one of the other terms that we see in these passages, is that idea of shepherd or pastor. I think pastor may have been kind of the Greek, from the Greek, but it comes from the word poimen, and it refers to one who tends and feeds, okay? And so I think to what you're saying, the pastor is a herdsman or shepherd, and metaphorically it's a shepherd of the people, a captain, a chief. And we see several places where it's used, what Brother Murphy just said in 1 Peter 2:25, but also Ephesians 4:11. We see that as well. Let's turn over there and look at that real quick. It says, he gave some, and this was the verse I was talking about earlier, he gave some as apostles and some as prophets and some as evangelists and some as pastors and teachers. And so, here is what his message is in this, is that there's different roles for different people, but he's using the word here, pastor, in this poimen term that's translated shepherd or pastor. We also see it in 1 Peter chapter 5 when it's used as a verb where he says, shepherd the flock as overseers. And so the manner in which they are to tend and feed is one who is as an overseer as well, related to that term we just talked about a second ago. I also think we can appreciate to some degree that term by noticing its usage throughout the Bible. So I think the first one that, at least that I think of when we think about shepherds in the Bible is who's probably the first person that we think about?
David,
yeah. Yeah, I would have taken David or Jesus, right? But I think David. David's who I think of first because we think of Psalms 23, and how David wrote that, but we know David's background. We know that David started out as a shepherd, and that that was his occupation as a young man. And then, of course, Psalms 23, he's seeing the likeness between how the shepherd cares for a flock and how God has cared for Israel and cared for his people. Isaiah 40, we see that Isaiah foresaw the life, and the work of Jesus as one of a shepherd. And then Jesus also refers to himself as what? The good shepherd, right? And so we see that, in John chapter 10, we see him refer to himself that way several times, Jesus referring to himself as the good shepherd. Let's look real quick before we move on to qualifications at the other term that we see here, which is elder or presbyter. And so that comes from the word presbyteros, and that typically signifies somebody who's older, more advanced in years. And I think the it's not simply referring to somebody who's of a certain age in terms of a number like we like to think of it, I think, but somebody with life experience, understanding, and I think we mentioned earlier the idea of the position requiring wisdom. And so wisdom comes with what? Right. Age, maturity, knowledge, but it's knowledge and then also wisdom, maturity, experience, I think somebody said over here. So all of those things go together. And so you see where, that would be important for such an important role. We see that in Acts chapter 14 as well, this term. And Timothy's going to use, Paul is going to use it here in the next chapter. And he'll use this term as well in verse 14 of chapter 4. This is another term that you can look and see in the Old Testament. In Exodus chapter 4, the terms, it's an example of where the terms were originally designated, the older men or the heads of families who exercise government over their families. Yes, sir?
Just a thought while we think about the in detail the words that we're about to look at. There's a practicality I think many of us have seen over time that a person can more or less serve in the position of an elder and not ping to the extreme all the characteristics that we're talking about. Maybe they do extremely well in many of them and come up short here in one or two things. Maybe they're not very hospitable in the sense of welcoming strangers kind of thing, whatever it might be. We're looking at something that was written about 30 years after the church began to be. So for a generation, the church has been going on doing something best they could. The apostles had moved around, appointed elders. Paul wrote to Titus and said, take care of this, the churches that need to have this feature. And it's interesting to think about, how did that go? The churches that were getting by, maybe without the best guidance at the time. The Lord knows how to sort that out. The thing that occurs to me is when we find ourselves in circumstances where a church has leadership that has some flaws in it, we have to decide, do we just toss them all out and start over again? What's best for us to do? And the phrase that works best in my mind is do what you can, and when you learn better, do better. Life's a struggle.
And I think too, this goes back to what we kind of said at the beginning about men wanting to do this, about men desiring to do this work. Because I think you have to approach it from that standpoint, you know, that, that this is something that you want to work towards in your life, and these things are things that you are constantly working to get better. And if you're, you know, a person who can't be an elder, that doesn't mean that these aren't things that you can't work on. If you're a woman who is married, you can certainly encourage your husband and work with your husband to be qualified. But I certainly agree with you. I think that you know, this talks about kind of this overall mindset as we look through what these words mean. It's to help us understand, and I think even maybe appreciate all of the subtleties and the aspects that go with being an elder, and why these qualifications are what they are. The first century also used the term to signify the rulers in the synagogue and rulers of the people. We see that in Luke chapter 22. He says in verse 66, "As soon as it was day, the elders of the people, both chief priests and scribes, came together and led him into their council." So we see that this term, talking about the older men, whether it was in the synagogue, but particularly, you know, the men who ruled the families or exercised government over their families. And so these ideas hold the idea of rulers in the church with some sort of authority. Yes, sir. Or yes, ma'am. I'm sorry.
I was prompted by when you talked about the elders appointed in Exodus, you know, to help Moses. And I thought all these qualifications that are discussed here, I think of Moses as a good shepherd, that in everything he went to the Lord. There was a problem, he went to the Lord. So it speaks to a close relationship with the Lord. If you can fulfill all these qualifications, that you are walking closely with the Lord and you care more about others and those in the congregation than yourself, just the selfless shepherd idea.
Yeah, absolutely. Just to kind of summarize the terms, and so we can move on to the qualifications, these three terms illustrate the work, objective, of, and God's expectations of this office. So this was an older man that is to be viewed as a chief or shepherd among the saints of a local church, who is responsible for watching, guarding, inspecting, overseeing God's people. These terms give us a fearful description of the grave responsibility that these men have. The overall picture is a man of age who cares enough about God's people to watch over them so that no evil befalls them. And I think we see, if we turn over to Hebrews chapter 13, let's read verse 17 real quick. And I think this is an important point for us to make when studying this, is because he's written all of these things. The author of Hebrews has gone through and written out all of these things about the superiority of the system that we are under now. And he's going through in so much in chapter 13, talking about Jesus and then talking about sacrifices that are pleasing to God. And then in verse 17, he says to Christians, he says, "Obey your leaders and submit to them," talking about the elders there, "for they keep watch over your souls as those who will give an account. Let them do this with joy and not with grief, for this would be unprofitable for you." And so I think it's important for us as we kind of wrap up these terms, those of us of the flock who are not bishops and overseers, is this is a verse that we need to have underlined, and we need to always be coming back to this and saying, am I doing these things? Am I submitting to the leaders? Am I obeying them? Understanding the grave responsibility that they have. And, you know, all you have to do is talk to an elder, talk to an elder's wife, talk to somebody who was an elder or was married to one, and you get an idea that it is difficult for both of them, but it is not. I've never experienced this where I've talked to somebody and it was anything they regretted. But you can tell that it's not easy. That there's a lot that they deal with that we will never know about. So are we doing this in a way that makes us acceptable to God? Because it tells us, let them do this with joy and not with grief. How would we grieve the elders? How would a shepherd be grieved by his sheep? Think about that one sheep that always wanders off. Right? Always, constantly.
State of rebellion.
State of rebellion. You know, the hard-headed sheep. I guess as hard-headed as a sheep can be, but they can be. You know, they sheep are motivated by very few things in this life.
And, you can ask, how would you be grieved by your teenagers?
Yeah. How would you be grieved by your teenagers? If you think about it in the home.
Jesus said that his sheep listen to his voice. That can be a problem for those who don't.
Right. Right. And so we can grieve them by not doing what we're supposed to do, by not living our lives the way we're supposed to be living it, because the shepherds are outnumbered. You know, they didn't put an equal. It wasn't a one-to-one relationship with a sheep and a flock. That in just that scenario is not economical. You know, and so sheep aren't worth that much. But in the church, it's you know, we have a flock of people. And we can certainly remind ourselves, I think, regularly that we need to let them do this with joy and not with grief. It's something that they aspired and desired to do, and they do it because it's a good work. They're helping the kingdom, and they're serving us. And so if we think of it like that, I think it's just more important that we should make sure that we're doing it in a way, living our lives in a way that gives them joy to do this. And have we checked in with them? Have we asked them these kind of questions? You know, am I living my life in a way that is making it good for you? You know, and I think I would encourage us. I don't think I've gone up to any elders and said that, but we should make an effort to do these things so that we let them do it with joy and not with grief, because they are grieved when they have to deal with these things, because it is a very important and dire situation that they have to tend to. And so they're doing it as watchers of our souls. All right. Once again, Matt is behind schedule. So we are going to move on now to the qualifications. Oh, wait, we have one comment real quick. Yes, ma'am.
When we were in Dallas, we had an elder who had a very high position in a bank. But he felt that this office was so important that he took a lower position. And I was so impressed that he felt it was needful that he spend more time than he was able to spend. I mean, never had heard of that before, nor since, but it was that important to him.
Yeah, I mean, and that speaks to the heart of a man who realizes what's important. All right. So in these next few verses, he goes through all of the qualifications. And I said last week that we're going to just touch on the positive ones in that group. Then we'll touch on some of the negative qualifications and the familiar ones mixed in there too. So the first thing they have to do is be blameless, which also some versions will say without reproach. One who cannot be laid hold of, who gives no ground for accusation, is how Marvin Vincent defines it. Vine says it's one that cannot be laid hold of, not open to censure, irreproachable. First question, does blameless mean perfect? No. No. We've already, I think, established that this isn't about being perfect. It's about being qualified. And so the first term he uses here is blameless. Yes, sir?
I think the term blameless is a legal term. I may be wrong about that. But the point is that no charge can be sustained against the individual, meaning it proven, meaning it's just not justified. So that's the element of it. I do believe it is a legal term.
I think you're right, and I think that goes to the what Vine says about the. I think in the longer explanation of that, really goes back to that cannot be laid hold of, or you know, in like we might say in common vernaculars, charges won't stick, right? You know the, and so we have a couple examples of these. We're not going to take time to read them all, but. of where people in the Bible have been described as being blameless. Particularly, I think about Zacharias and Elizabeth. Luke chapter 1, 5, and 6. In verse 6, they were both righteous before God, walking in all the commandments and the ordinances of the Lord, blameless. This idea that, you know, that they were, of how they were living their lives. And so there are, we see this word also used in Hebrews chapter 8, and then also with Samuel in his life. And so it was described there in Samuel, 1 Samuel chapter 12 as well. The next qualification that's there is that he lays out is they have to be the husband of one wife. And so, you know, the husband of one wife comes from the Greek mias, or M-I-A-S, and it simply means one to the exclusion of the others, and that's according to Vine. And so it's specifically would forbid celibacy, polygamy. I think what Paul is saying here is that an elder is to live in a scriptural marriage, just as any other married person, somebody not living in adultery. And so I'm going to admit this is one of the qualifications of an elder that we like to bring up. Hypotheticals and questions and discussions, and we've got, well, what if this and what if that? And I think it's important for us to look at this and go, is it a scriptural marriage? And so that doesn't mean that it's simply a scriptural marriage that is all that is needed. Yes, sir.
I've had to do a lot of thought through the years on this husband of one wife and what it means, and you're right, this one tends to come up more than others. And I think what I've kind of settled in my mind is what you were saying, too, is I think all of these characteristics, and I like that term, their characteristics. I mean, these are men, they're qualified based on their character. He's not qualified because he's married. He's qualified because of how he deals with his marriage and treats his marriage and so forth. And the reason I've come to that, I tend to think of it as he's a one-woman man. He's completely faithful in his duties as a husband to his wife. And the reason I feel that way, if you look over in 1 Timothy 5, 9, it uses the term in reverse when it talks about widows that can be enrolled in the care of the church. It says the wife of one husband.
Yeah.
Well, surely that doesn't mean she couldn't have been married more than one time, in a sense, because he commands the younger widows to remarry.
Right.
I think it really has to do that as a wife, she was faithful to her husband. She was a one-man type of woman. And I think that over here in the qualifications for the man, his characteristic is he is a one-woman man.
Yeah, and that's where I've settled on it as well. I think also... you know, I've gone primarily to Romans 7 for the woman, verse 2 and 3, for the woman who has a husband is bound by the law to her husband as long as he lives. But if the husband dies, she's released from the law of her husband. So then if while her husband lives, she marries another man, she will be called an adulteress. But if her husband dies, she is free from that law so that she is no adulteress, though she has married another man. And so I've always kind of looked at that one. You know, obviously it's talking... it's kind of centered around the woman and her relationship with a husband, but it's a two-person relationship there. So, but yes, I mean, to your point too about, you know, being in a scriptural marriage. And so, of course, the other situation when you are defining a scriptural marriage involves scriptural divorces. And so, you know, somebody can still be in a scriptural marriage with that in their background. And I'm just going to say, but I think we have to ask ourselves whether or not it's wise in that situation. And so my point about that is that when we're looking at these qualifications, they're not simply check boxes. They are, you know, there's no leeway on whether or not they're qualified, but to Scott's point about being characteristics, you know, and speaking to their character. And so I think there are, at least for me, there's a lot of questions about whether it would be wise if there was a scriptural divorce. But I'm not going to stand up here, too, and say, nope, sorry, one way or the other. You know, in terms of I'm not going to certainly say that I know exactly what it falls on and what the Lord will say in the day of judgment. But I do think that would be one consideration, would be simply to think about that one. All right. We are out of time. We're going to pick up here, and we're going to say we're going to get through deacons next week too, but we're going to, let's go ahead and be reading through the qualifications of deacons as well, and then we'll continue with this. Thank you for your comments. Appreciate